Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, June 18th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, 8 more Humboldt cannabis permits revoked as tax steps linger, timber lawsuit threatens spotted owl, and partial park closure. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors is showing willingness to give cannabis cultivators who owe Measure S taxes some leeway, but is also proceeding with permit revocations. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County continues to revoke cannabis permits due to non-payment of Measure S excise taxes, but some debts are being addressed through payment plans and property buyers who are willing to assume the tax debts of previous cultivators. The county's Board of Supervisors approved 8 more cannabis permit revocations at its June 17th meeting. There were 9 permits recommended to be revoked, but the 9th is in the process of being transferred to a new owner who's agreed to pay a Measure S debt. There have been other cases of that, and County Planner Michael Kine described 3 examples of it, with properties in Bridgeville and Petrolia. In 2 of the 3 examples, Measure S tax debts of $68,000 and $10,000 have been paid in full. The 3rd property buyer has entered into a tax debt payment plan. Supervisor Steve Madrone said revocations must proceed, but there is what he described as an out.
There is an out here. That is, develop a payment plan. Right, that's kicking it down the road, so to speak, in that it gives time to try and hold on to that permit and make payments and finish that off by the end of the year. So that's the pathway forward for those folks, frankly. And we've deliberated over this over and over and over again to try and, I mean, we've given a lot of leeway over and over. And should we have ever had a Measure S? I don't believe so, but it is in place and it is there. So I just wanted to mention that because it is an out for people to at least preserve that permit.
But during a public comment period, cultivators described financial hardships that tax debts contribute to. Southern Humboldt cannabis farmer Craig Johnson described Measure S as a dysfunctional tax.
We were coming to the board from the very beginning saying this isn't working. We need help. And Supervisor Madrone, I really got to make this point. You just said you didn't think we should have a Measure S, but yet you were the hardest ones to pull into a reduction when it was time. And I just really want to like connect with all of you because we've been coming to the board and now I'm seeing some of these permits and these are pretty personal. Like these families have been trying hard. And I know it's too late now, but please, when your constituents are coming to you saying it's not working, please listen with both ears and ask more questions if you don't know. Measure S is just another way that it didn't work for the community.
Supervisor Rex Bone said he's gotten calls from realtors trying to sell properties with Measure S debts and abatement issues. Planning Director John Ford said the county regularly works with realtors and buyers to resolve those issues. Bone vouched for that approach, comparing cannabis farming to other financially challenged resource industries.
There seems to be a little bit of renaissance going on right now, people wanting to pick up parcels and do it on a smaller scale, but do it. I don't know if there's still a market out there. So, and especially for people that have had, that are in the market. So any way we can help keep that segment of the business, I would kind of like what we try to do with logging and fishing and all the other ones, even though we try to stop them. But I mean, we need those. We're a resource-based county. There's no way around it. We're, you know, most of our people work for the government, but somebody has to pay them. So as we move forward, anything we can do within legal realm. We can't give taxes away. We can work with people.
Supervisors voted to revoke 8 debt-saddled permits due to non-response from their owners and to hold off on revoking the one in the process of being transferred. They also directed staff to return with an agenda item on extending the county's payment plan program. The vote was unanimous, with Board Chair Michelle Bushnell absent. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Last April, the American Forest Resource Council, an umbrella organization for timber industry stakeholders, sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to lift protection of 3.5 million acres of forest land in California, Oregon, and Washington. Were the protection lifted, it could lead to logging of mature and old-growth forests and place the already threatened northern spotted owl in even deeper peril. Because of this, a coalition of environmental organizations in 3 states has now intervened in the lawsuit. KMUD's Sigur Bjorn has more.
It is a really unfortunate time to attempt to weaken protections for the northern spotted owl, because the northern spotted owl is really not doing well.
That was Tom Wheeler from the Environmental Protection Information Center, an Arcata-based nonprofit which has, along with several other environmental organizations in the Pacific Northwest, intervened in a lawsuit the timber industry has filed against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. For full disclosure, Tom Wheeler is associated with KMUD through the EcoNews report, which airs weekly on the station. The timber industry's suit was originally brought in early April in Washington, D.C. At stake are 3.5 million acres of forest land in California, Oregon, and Washington that were protected from logging in 2012 when it was designated as critical habitat for the endangered northern spotted owl. The spotted owl was listed as a threatened species in 1990 due to loss of habitat, chiefly caused by logging of mature and old-growth forests. The owl cannot nest in young forests, which may explain why the species has struggled to recover despite its designation as a threatened species. It is now estimated that only about 3,000 northern spotted owls remain.
Spotted owls are extinct in the wild in British Columbia. They are nearly extinct in Washington state. They're doing poorly in Oregon, and they're not doing well in California, but we have the strongest populations at this moment.
The species struggle is down to 3 significant factors: wildfires, habitat fragmentation through continued logging of mature forests, and the invasion of the barred owl into the spotted owl's natural habitat. Since 2012, the 3.5 million acres in question, almost all of it on federal land, has served as a perfect illustration of the difference in environmental policies of the last 2 Republican and Democratic administrations.
Now that Trump is back in office, the timber industry has filed a lawsuit, and they've said in their lawsuit that they believe that the Biden administration's decision to put back critical habitat that Trump had eliminated was unlawful.
The timber industry's lawsuit against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is being driven by the American Forest Resource Council, or AFRC, which is mostly made up of companies and organizations directly linked to the timber industry in one way or another. 4 counties in the Pacific states are directly linked to the suit, with Siskiyou being the only California county participating. A selection of counties in Oregon are also indirectly involved through a membership in an entity called the Association of ONC Lands. The plaintiffs allege that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service ignored sound science, legal precedent, and economic requirements under the Endangered Species Act when it expanded the spotted owl's protected area from 205,000 acres to 3.5 million. In a press release, the AFRC says the decline of the spotted owl is not down to logging, but wildfires and the introduction of the barred owl into the spotted owl's natural habitat. As a counterpoint, the environmental organizations contend that habitat fragmentation, one of the 3 reasons for the struggle of the spotted owls, is down to logging of mature forests. And one of the reasons the barred owl is thriving is that it is able to encroach on a traditional territory of the spotted owl because of logging. Tom Wheeler again.
So northern spotted owls require a very particular habitat. They require generally closed canopies and mature forests. These are things that take many decades to develop and have been systematically eliminated from our environment. So here in the redwoods, we have only 4% of old growth redwood still remaining. So we have a very kind of limited kind of habitat that is available to the northern spotted owl already. And logging of spotted owl habitat impacts spotted owls, but it doesn't impact barred owls in the same way, because barred owls are capable of using a much wider degree of habitat than spotted owls.
This is where conservationists and the timber industry agree. The barred owl is a major factor in the precarious state of the spotted owl. They seem to disagree on everything else, though, including how habitat fragmentation, i.e. logging, has weakened the spotted owl's gene pool and prevented it from increasing its numbers.
The barred owls have been coming down from British Columbia and they've been moving south. So where there is very significant barred owl invasion, we've seen extirpation of northern spotted owls. Okay. You have a population that is too geographically constricted that can't move, you know, then you start to have inbreeding impacts. And so it's important that we have habitat that's well connected so that, you know, populations can intermix and interbreed with each other so that we continue to have viable populations. The timber industry is trying to get in and turn these mature forests into young plantations. That won't work for northern spotted owls, but that is perfectly fine habitat for barred owls. So here in California, these impacts are going to be extremely felt.
The protection the northern spotted owl enjoys because of its legal status as a threatened species is instrumental in the fight to protect mature and old-growth forests from logging.
It will become a lot easier for timber companies to log mature forests without spotted owls. They are an umbrella by which we protect all of the other life that also coexists in those sorts of mature old-growth forests that spotted owls require. If there are individual owls present in an area, individual northern spotted owls present, we can use the Endangered Species Act to protect that landscape. Even where there are not individual northern spotted owls present, we have things like the Northwest Forest Plan, which is a large landscape-level effort to provide habitat for the northern spotted owl. If we lose northern spotted owls, if they go further towards extinction, we risk losing these sort of protections. If there aren't owls, we can't protect them under the Endangered Species Act. If owls go extinct, then the justification for the Northwest Forest Plan starts to open. And so we could start to see more logging of mature and old growth forests on public lands. Because we have northern spotted owls, we've prevented an astronomical amount of logging. We have increased forest carbon. We have protected other species that are reliant on that same habitat.
Although the environmental organizations are entering the lawsuit on the side of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and against the timber industry, they are primarily there to look out for the northern spotted owl and prevent mature and old-growth forests from being logged. Tom Wheeler.
We as a conservation community don't trust the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to do the right thing. So we are intervening in this lawsuit brought by the timber industry against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So we are in court and we are ready to defend the northern spotted owl and its habitat as we've done for decades at this point.
For KMUT, I am Sigurd Bjørn.
Dub in the Creek, which celebrates dub music and sound system culture, hosted their first ever festival at Tishtane Campground in Hoopa this weekend, Narali Devaney reports.
Mm-hmm. This past weekend, KMUD News was lucky to attend the first ever Dub in the Creek, a dub festival celebrating sound system culture in our community and around the world. The festival took place at Tishtang Campground, a beautiful campground along the Trinity River in the Hoopa Valley. The weekend was full of brisk river jumps, sunshine, delicious local food, and dub music from artists who traveled from all over the world, including Amsterdam, the UK, Hawaii, St. Croix, and some right here in Humboldt County. While the scene is relatively small in our area, dub music, which goes hand in hand with sound system culture, is a worldwide phenomenon that has massive followings all over the globe. Dub originated in Jamaica in the late 1960s and early 1970s as a subgenre of reggae that focuses on remixing, emphasizes heavy bass and rhythm, and uses studio effects like reverb and delay to create a heavy atmospheric sound. It continues to evolve with new artists and new technology. One of the performers, Tippy I from St. Croix, spoke on the history and current state of the genre during his set at Dub in the Creek.
Jammies, Tubbies, Scratch Perry, Augustus, Pablo. The list goes on and on. You know, when those guys were cutting edge, they weren't living in any throwback mentality. So I love the modern dub. And what you see here is a mixing board. It's a MIDI-controlled computer station acting as a mixing board. So we in 2025. So make some noise for live dub in 2025, because we need this art form alive. This art form helped create hip-hop, helped create EDM. Something brand new.
With dub being a deeply spiritual and social justice forward genre, it was not taken lightly by performers or organizers that they were being hosted on Hoopa land. We caught up with the Hoopa tribe's recreation manager, Inker, who told us about the beautiful traditional style sauna and handmade showers he designed in the campground, as well as getting this festival going and some of the other work he does in this space.
So my handle is, I'm the physical health and recreation manager. I run all parks. I run soccer fields, baseball parks, rodeo grounds, gymnasiums, swimming pools, and
that's
campgrounds.
Keeping everyone healthy.
My job is that I gave these guys, they came to see me about this music. And then I have to go to a higher level as the chairman, because, I mean, he's my boss. I said, well, hey, they haven't needed a place to play a concert, but this is all part of my vision too. I've seen this in my vision. All this stuff's coming true. But if you look at the very end down there, there's a yurt down at the very bottom. Mm. So I have a language class here too. So they don't speak no English. Mm-hmm. 2 to 4 year old kids speak nothing but the Hoopa language. Mm-hmm. So English will be their second language, because
wow,
Hoopa should be their first in the first place.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
And so they see it in a different way. They see it in a Hoopa way instead of interpreting it from English to Hoopa. Now the interpretation from Hoopa to English. So now they see it the way it's supposed to be, you know, mm-hmm, which is pretty cool. I mean, what do you think about
and
that?
And do you help teach those classes, or are you just
actually
helping the facility? Cool.
Yeah, my wife works there.
Wow.
Yeah, and she's a linguist, so she goes to Humboldt Cal Poly, too. And she's a straight-A student, and she's going to be graduating here pretty soon. But she has a hard time coming back sometimes, flipping over from English, because she was just start talking in Hoop all the time. So, which is good, because when I was a kid, I knew it. As you get older, you kind of get away, but now it's all coming back. This place is actually bringing it all back to me, so
mm-hmm,
this place has a special magical power too.
Inker also gave us a personal tour of some swimming spots and a beautiful picnic area with a prayer rock where he has hosted dozens of weddings. He also designed a custom path down to symbolize the sometimes rough and rocky path of love as couples walk to the altar. Head organizer of the festival was Tobel of Noble Tobel Productions. We caught up with Tobel before the festival to discuss why he was doing it, what his intentions were, and what he was looking forward to.
I could definitely say I want Dub in the Creek to grow. I definitely want to keep it in Humboldt. And I definitely want everyone to come and enjoy and see what Sound System is really about and what we're portraying to the world, what Sound System is for us. And just come kind of like with an open heart, open vibe, you know, positive vibe. And I think it will be an amazing experience for those who haven't really seen Sound System presented like this in our local area or just in the U.S. alone. And I really am gearing towards globalizing sound system culture in the U.S. and envision just growing from here on out.
Some personal highlights from the lineup included Green Lion Crew, King Shiloh, Archangel, Roughneck Posse, Tippy Eye, Sinai Sound, and of course the iconic Johnny Osborne, who helped shape the genre in its early days. We also loved watching Dandelion, who shared her excitement about Dubbin' the Creek with us shortly after hopping off the mic.
It was fun. I love music. I love to sing. I love to perform. And I'm just so happy to be at Tishtang again. Like, I wasn't going to be here this year, and I'm here at Tishtang on the reservation in Hoopa. Wow. Thank you to people for having us here. You're all my relations. I know that. Peace out, Dandelion.
One key aspect to dub music is the sound system. Sound system culture originated alongside dub music and is a musical and social movement that involves powerful, large, mobile sound systems that can be found at street parties and public events, fostering community and cultural expression. It's a collaborative culture that involves DJs, MCs, sound engineers, and the audience. Sound systems are loud, and when standing in front of one, you can feel the noise vibrate through your body, almost like an internal massage. Together, Noble Tobel Sound System and Basscraft Sound Systems brought sound to Dubbin' the Creek that was powerful and echoed throughout the valley all day and into the night. Dubbin' the Creek was an exciting new addition to the Humboldt County musical landscape, and there is already talk about next year. We were honored to be present at the birth of this new festival, which uplifts an important cultural and musical corner of our community. For KMUD News, this is Naralee Devaney.
Grizzly Creek, Redwood State Park Campground, Visitor Center, and Day Use Area will be closed until June 25th, 2025. Due to the full road closure on Highway 36, the closure is located 0.5 miles west of the campground entrance and is a result of an active landslide. Campground reservations will be canceled and refunded through Reserve California. North Coast Redwoods District leadership are reminding the public to stay away from the area for safety purposes. Cheatham Grove is not affected by the road closure and it is located west of the landslide. California State Parks will apprise the public about the estimated facilities reopening as soon as the assessment and road reopening plan is determined by Caltrans. Up-to-date information will be provided at the park's website at parks.ca.gov/Grizzly Creek. The public is also urged to check road closures at Caltrans's website at quickmap.ca.gov. In state news, state budget agreements scales back immigrant health cuts. More negotiations expected by July 1st. KPFA's Brooke Helena Kirchner reports.
Governor Newsom agrees with the nonpartisan budget analyst that the state faces a structural deficit of $10 to $30 billion per year. Newsom released his revised budget last month. Under that plan, the state would still spend around $20 billion more than it takes in. Newsom's budget would make up that difference with a $7.1 billion appropriation from the state's rainy day reserve, along with cuts to medical care and social services for low-income Californians. State Senator Scott Wiener says, under the legislature's plan, those vital services wouldn't need to be cut.
We were able to significantly scale back the governor's proposed reductions relating to Medi-Cal and our immigrant communities. We were able to delay some of those changes and scale them back in other ways. We also completely rejected the governor's proposed cut to in-home supportive services, including with respect to immigrant Californians.
The state must pass a budget by June 15th to comply with the constitutional deadline. But the new fiscal year won't start until July 1st. That means a lot more negotiating between the governor's office and state lawmakers lies ahead. The legislature's budget proposal includes an amendment that would eliminate funding for nonprofit legal services for people facing deportation, regardless of their criminal history or immigration status. Lisa Knox is legal director of the California Collaborative for Immigrant Justice. She said in a statement, quote, At a time when the Trump administration is sending in the military to make sure ICE can violently detain as many people as possible in California, it is unconscionable that our state legislature would pull the rug out from under people who need legal representation to fight this fascist government's attempts to permanently separate them from their families. The Senate is expected to vote on the bill in the coming days. For KPFA News, I'm Brooke Helena Kirchner.
Activists want promise shuttered. California prisons don't get repurposed for immigrant detentions. KPFA's Anna Suya Thurukut reports.
A coalition that advocates for the closure of prisons wants to make sure prisons shut down by the state are not repurposed to detain immigrants. Californians United for a Responsible Budget, or CURB, is a Black-led nonprofit organization focused on reducing the number of incarcerated people and prisons in the state. As ICE raids continue and as the federal government looks for new detention centers, advocates are speaking out. They are urging Governor Newsom to permanently shut down deactivated prisons in the state.
They're in something what's called warm shutdown. So it's this phase of closure where the facility is still going, the water's still on, the lights are still on, there's still staff there, but there's no incarcerated people.
That's Brian Caneda, deputy director of CURB, talking about the prisons that are in a so-called warm shutdown. The decision to close or deactivate prisons by the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation has helped in saving hundreds of millions of dollars annually.
But right now we're at a really, really important time in the state budget cycle. So the governor released his May revise, which is his proposal to the legislature about what the budget should be.
The revised budget has a $12 billion deficit that advocates say can be reduced if the state permanently shuts down deactivated prisons. According to Caneda, keeping empty prisons in a warm shutdown has already cost over $300 million for the state.
These are wasteful buildings that are now going to be absconded with by a rogue federal government and used for illegal purposes, unless they're shut down by the government and the legislature of California immediately.
The American Civil Liberties Union recently came across records suggesting that ICE officials are actively considering expanding immigration detention centers in different states, including California. ICE has reportedly expressed interest in reopening the closed federal women's prison in Dublin as a detention center for immigrants. For KPFA News, I am Anasuya Thurukut.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Sikira Bjorn, Narali Devaney, Anna Suya Thurukut, and Brooke Helena Kirchner. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts, where you can download our news stories and newscast for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.